Well, what's the next step? I'm sure Teddy has a plan. He said he's going to file a complaint and an appeal. I'm not going to hold my breath, though.
A complaint?
The hearing wasn't exactly by the book, I replied, my tone acidic. They didn't listen to what either of us had to say, and it was pretty obvious from the first minute that it wasn't going to go my way. There was one witch in particular who really got under my skin. It felt... I don't know. It felt personal, somehow. But I swear I have no idea who she is, or why she would care so much whether or not I got my potions license.
What's her name?
I don't know. They don't exactly wear name tags. Teddy is going to find out more. He said she's probably some kind of understudy trying to flaunt her newfound authority while the main council members are busy with this fraud case. I paused, remembering Mrs. Claremont's shuttered potion shop. When was the last time you were in the Seattle Haven?
I don't know. A few months ago, I guess. Most of my clients are humans, and even when I'm in Seattle, I prefer to stay in a standard hotel and avoid all the hoopla.
I smiled. Adam was unapologetically himself, through and through. He'd left the Haven system some years before and had no plan to ever return, despite his parents' insistence he needed to grow out of his nomad phase. Well, apparently this guy named Praxel has been pressuring businesses into selling to him so he can spread these chains of shops all over the Haven. He was even having people hurt in order to scare them into giving up their property.
Whoa, fun guy.
I absently stroked Boots' fur. Enough about this mess. Tell me what's going on at the manor. I've only been gone a couple of days and I already miss it.
Well...
Adam hesitated.
What?
I asked, sitting up. Is everything all right?
Mostly?
Not convincing, Adam groaned.
I don't want to dump more problems on your shoulders, but things here aren't exactly going as planned either.
I scooted to the edge of the couch at the cringe in Adam's voice. Boots scowled up at me for disturbing him. What happened? Tell me you didn't get into it with Lacey. If he did, there was a fairly high likelihood the manor had paid the price. The owner, and resident ghost, Posey, had a tendency to manifest her frustrations or anxieties into physical reactions through the house, with literal earth-shaking effects.
No. No, this has nothing to do with Lacey. Other than the fact that we currently have a human living under the same roof as our favorite little undead princess, and eventually she might want to swap out her faux blood smoothie for a hit of the real stuff.
What? Who's at the manor?
Nick?
My brow furrowed. Why? Nick Rivers owned a successful private investigation business and a beautiful one-bedroom condo on the outskirts of town. Why would he need to crash at the manor?
I found him out in the bushes, prowling around last night.
Sounds familiar, I said with a faint smile, recalling the first time Nick and I met.
He's remembering things, Holly. About that night outside Raven. He's asking too many questions, and I don't know how to shut him up.
I winced. Batwings.
Yeah. We've got to find a way to cast another memory-erasing spell before he brings us all down. From the sound of things, you can't really afford another scandal or to draw the eye of the council.
Not particularly. I sighed. Why was he prowling through the bushes?
He was looking for goblins. At least that's what he said. I figure he means Harvey.
He remembers Harvey? I yelped. Batwings, this is really bad, Adam.
I know, gorgeous. I talked him into coming inside, and Evangeline slipped him some of your sleeping potion. I think she got the dose wrong, though.
Man, alive! I groaned. How much did she give him?
2 scoops.
Oh, why didn't you guys call me? At this rate, he's going to be passed out until the weekend.
That might not be a bad thing. Adam said.
Adam?
All right. What's the antidote?
I rambled off a recipe to bring Nick back from the land of the living dead and was about to wrap up the phone call when a loud thunk sounded through the wall of the adjoining suite. I frowned, wondering what Teddy was doing. Had he lost his temper and thrown something? I stood up and moved closer to the wall. and heard another thud. This time it sounded like a door being slammed. What in the other world was he doing over there? Seconds later, someone was pounding on the door to my suite. Hold on a second, Adam. I went to the door and peered out through the peephole. Teddy was standing there, still beating on the door. I waved a hand, dispelling the security ward sealing the door, and pulled it open. Teddy's cheeks were drained of all their rosiness. His eyes were wide, and a sheen of sweat coated his wide forehead. Teddy? What's wrong?
Harvey's been found.
Found?
Holly, he's dead.
Chapter 5. Once I was seated on the couch, the room continued to spin. Teddy paced back and forth in front of me, speaking softly into the phone. My thoughts were jumbled and tangled to the point that I couldn't make sense of his conversation. Somewhere in my muddled thoughts, I realized I didn't even know who he was talking to. One panicked thought rang out above the rest. Harvey was gone, and if the gaping pit in my stomach was to be trusted, it had something to do with me. Teddy stopped pacing.
All right, call me when you hear something.
I looked up from the thick carpet of my hotel suite and met Teddy's eyes.
What happened?
I don't know many of the details yet. Teddy rubbed the back of his neck.
That was my contact in L.A. He writes for the Haven Herald. He's looking into it, but someone found Harvey dead in the backseat of a taxi parked in the alley behind a warehouse in the industrial district.
Of Seattle? Teddy nodded.
This is going to be tricky. The SBA has called in their special task force that handles situations like this. They'll make sure the human who found him has his memory wiped and the cops don't interfere. They will set charms and wards over the scene to contain it until it's processed so humans won't see anything. We should have more information soon, but from what I'm hearing, it's not good.
Teddy moved to take the armchair opposite my place on the couch.
Should you call back whomever you were talking to?
I glanced at my cell phone. As soon as Teddy's news sunk in, I dropped it to the floor. Teddy had quickly swept it up and told the caller I'd get back to them, and then hung up.
It was Adam.
Teddy gave a slight nod.
I assumed.
I told him about the hearing, and I squeezed my eyes closed as my words trailed off.
Stars, Teddy. I told him I thought Harvey had betrayed me.
Teddy leaned forward and grabbed one of my hands.
Holly, you can't beat yourself up. You didn't know? We still don't know what happened. I don't know what made Harvey leave the council chamber today. None of the pieces are fitting together right now. It's all speculation and what-ifs. Let's wait to hear back from Marvin, and then we'll figure out our next move.
Okay. I gave Teddy's hand a gentle squeeze and stood up.
I'm going to call Adam back. I'll let you know if I hear anything else.
Teddy swept from the suite and went back to his room. I placed a new security ward on the door, and then retrieved my phone and dialed Adam back with trembling fingers.
Holly? What the heck happened to you? Are you all right?
I nodded, trying to get myself under control and keep my voice from wavering.
I'm fine, but Harvey was found.
Adam, he's dead.
What?
Adam sputtered. Teddy has been trying to reach him since the hearing. He just got word that Harvey was found dead in a taxi in some back alley inside Seattle proper.
What happened? Was it a crash?
No, it wasn't a crash. We're waiting for more details. Apparently a human found him parked and called it into the Seattle police. The SPA is in the process of taking over the scene. I paused, fidgeting with the ends of my hair.
But I'm pretty sure I heard Teddy use the word gruesome. Where are you right now?
Adam asked. I could almost see him going for the stairs, hitting the entryway, and throwing on his leather jacket.
I'm at the hotel. I'm leaving right now. I'll take a cab. The train takes too long.
The background noises rose and fell as he verbally mapped out his plan.
Adam, I said with a deep sigh. I'm fine.
I wished I sounded more convincing. Truth was, the whole thing had me rattled. It had been an extraordinarily odd day, and in a few hours the sun would be setting on a terrible tragedy.
Ollie, this is not up for debate. I'm coming. You shouldn't be alone with all this going on.
I rolled my eyes. But somewhere inside I was glad he would arrive before dark, and I wouldn't have to spend what was likely to be a sleepless night alone. All right. I'll call if I hear anything else. We ended the call, and I passed the time by taking a long shower. It was far from relaxing, but at least the hot water beating down on my back helped ease the knotted muscles that felt as though they'd been bunched together for months, ever since Harvey had shown up at the manor and caught me making potions in the kitchen. I sighed deeply and tried to sort through the lingering questions over his sudden disappearance from the hearing. Had he left over an SBA emergency? And if so, why hadn't his assistant known his whereabouts? Or had he left because he never had any intention on testifying on my behalf? Maybe he turned over the complete unrestricted case files and hung me out to dry. Or was there another reason? Maybe he'd simply seen the writing on the wall and decided to get back to work. The council hadn't exactly appeared open to hearing another version of the story. I stepped out of the shower and wrapped myself in the plush robe furnished by the hotel, then knotted the sash and went into the adjoining bedroom and found my phone. Perched on the edge of the giant bed, I dialed Harvey's number. The call patched over to his assistant, who sounded muffled and subdued when she answered.
"Harvey Culpepper's office. He's not available right now. How can I help you?"
I cringed. The poor woman. Likely bound by some internal protocol, she'd have to play along, all the while knowing her boss wasn't ever going to come back again. I'd met Harvey's assistant on a few occasions. She was a lovely witch who obviously adored her abrasive boss. There was no doubt she would mourn his passing for some time to come.
"Hello, Harriet. It's Holly Bolt."
"Oh, Holly,"
she sniffled.
"Have you heard?"
"Yes. I'm so sorry."
"Me too."
"Harriet, I have to ask. This morning, when Harvey walked out of the council hearing, where did he go?" Harriet sniffed again.
I'm really not sure, Holly. As far as I knew, he was planning to be busy all morning. I assumed it was because of your hearing, but when your lawyer called, he told me Harvey left halfway through."
"That's right. No idea where he went?"
"He called me, must have been close to 9 o'clock, and told me he was done with the hearing and had been called away to a meeting. I thought it was strange because there wasn't anything on his schedule, and even after he called, the ledger didn't update. Normally it shifts and shuffles as he goes through his day, so I always know where he's at. It's enchanted with a tracking spell, but his signal wasn't anywhere. That only happens when he leaves the haven."
I nodded, trying to wedge the new fragments of information together. "Does he normally leave the haven?"
"He hates leaving the haven, and he definitely wouldn't be in a taxi cab. You know, new Harvey. He liked the finer things in life. He would have used the portal to go into Seattle if he was going somewhere on foot. And if he needed a car, he would have used an SPA-owned town car. He never would have used a human taxi."
The sight would raise a few eyebrows. Harvey, with his pointed ears, sharp teeth, and spider-like hands, would have had trouble fitting in outside the haven. The only SPA agents who worked outside the haven system were ones who could seamlessly blend in with humans, so as not to alert them to the existence of creatures that filled both their storybooks and nightmares.
"Harriet, I hate to ask, but what did Harvey have to say about my hearing? Were you under the impression he was prepared to testify on my behalf?"
"As far as I knew, he didn't say much about it, but when he left this morning, that was his first stop."
I sighed. I knew Harvey trusted Harriet implicitly, but I didn't want to risk uncovering his secrets by telling her he'd promised to bury evidence to keep me out of trouble. It was likely best to keep that detail to myself, at least for the time being.
"He cared about you very much, dear. Harvey was a complicated soul. His mind worked in ways that most wouldn't understand. I know he was tough on you, but he had your best interests at heart. That much I know for certain. He must have had a very good reason for leaving the hearing without providing his testimony.
A bittersweet warmth spread through me, taking away some of the doubt that had lingered there since the moment I'd turned and found his place on the bench abandoned.
"Thank you, Harriet." Tears welled up in the corners of my eyes. "I appreciate your time, and I'm so sorry for your... our... loss."
"Thank you, Holly. You take care of yourself, okay?"
"I will." I ended the call and set the phone beside me on the bed. Before I could reflect too much, somebody knocked on my door. I cinched the robe tight again and padded out to check the security peephole. Teddy stood there, looking worried. I released the security ward and opened the door. He hurried into the room and I set the ward again.
"Hear from your friend at the Herald?" I asked him. Teddy gave a quick nod.
"It looks like Harvey might have been poisoned. The SBA agents on the scene found a cup of coffee laced with some kind of potion inside the taxicab. My guy's source is within the SBA, and he said they're taking it back to headquarters for further testing."
"Poisoned?" I gulped. It was a risky way to kill someone. Potions held a magical signature of the wizard or witch who'd crafted it. Granted, there were several ways around it, but it took skill and know-how. Most witches and wizards who weren't savvy in the world of potion crafting didn't even realize there was a way to trace the magic required to pull the ingredients together into a viable potion.
"The human who called it in said he was going back to work after a smoke break. He works at one of the factories in that part of town. He says it's rare to have cars, especially cabs, around. He walked up thinking something untoward might be going on, and found Harvey with his face pressed up against the glass, mouth open."
Teddy stopped and raised a hand.
"I won't get into all the details, but it was quite a shock to the young man. He called the police, but the SBA caught wind of the dispatch call, figured something super might be involved, and sent agents to the scene."
"How awful. Poor Harvey," I shuddered.
"No one else saw anything?"
Teddy shook his head. "At least no one has come forward yet."
"I called Harvey's assistant," I said, then relayed what Harriet had told me over the phone.
"His voicemail said he was out on business, but that doesn't match up with what we've heard. Especially the mode of transportation and the fact that he was alone. If there was some kind of operation or emergency, he would have been with other agents. They would have taken cars or the portals into the city."
"It doesn't make sense. Why would someone want to kill Harvey?" I paced in front of the couch. "I should go and offer my assistance. Maybe I could help him trace the potion, or see where the ingredients came from. I could..."
"Holly," Teddy interjected gently, "the SBA has it covered. They're not going to let someone outside the agency come in and step on the investigation. Besides that..."
He paused and shifted his eyes around the room, as though only just realizing his surroundings.
"What?"
His gaze circled back to me.
"Holly, there's something else. Another clue."
The low tone of his voice set my heart racing. "What is it, Teddy?" He swallowed hard and wrung his hands together.
"There was a note in Harvey's pocket. It said, 'Choose your allies carefully.'"
I blinked. "And you think that means me?"
"We don't know, Holly. But it does seem a little coincidental. He gets called away in the middle of your hearing where he's agreed to testify on your behalf, and the next thing we know he's found poisoned with this threatening note. I feel it's better to be safe than sorry. I've canceled the request for a follow-up hearing before the council, and I think it would be best if we both headed back to Beechwood Harbor. We need to let the SBA handle this case before we plan our next move."
My pulse continued to race, long after Teddy went back to his room to make the travel arrangements. Chapter 6 Adam arrived a couple of hours later, and from the sound in the hallway, Evangeline was with him. I hurried to open the door, with boots weaving around my ankles.
"Hey, you guys," I said, pulling the door open wide.
Boots marched out into the hall and swirled around Evangeline's legs. She bent and scooped him up into her arms, and he immediately batted at the end of the long raven braid that hung over one shoulder. I smiled and stepped back to usher them into the room. Adam frowned at me.
"You didn't ask me for the password," he said, rooting himself in the hallway.
"Password?" I repeated, glancing at Evangeline. She sighed.
"To make sure I am who I say I am. I texted it to you on the drive here, didn't you see it?"
"No, I didn't." I shook my head. "Tell you what, I'm going to do a visual confirmation." I stepped back and gave him a once-over. "You're all clear, St. James." Evangeline giggled and swept into the room, boots propped on her hip as though he were a chubby toddler instead of an overgrown tabby cat.
"Ignore him. He's gone full-blown Jack Bauer since you called about the note they found. I had to listen to his insane ramblings all the way here."
She waved a hand. She surveyed the suite as she wandered further inside until her eyes snagged on the bottle of wine sitting on the wet bar.
"Hello, lovely."
She glanced at me, a Cheshire smile on her face.
"Mind if I break into this?"
I laughed softly and waved a hand.
"Help yourself."
I turned back to Adam, whose frown was deeply etched into his handsome face. I sighed.
"Fine, Adam. What's the password?"
"Pistachios."
I glanced over my shoulder at Evangeline, and she rolled her eyes. I smiled at Adam.
"Great, you got it on the first try. Now please come inside."
Adam growled, mumbling under his breath as he stalked into the room.
"I don't know why I bother."
"None of us do, dear," Evangeline replied.
I suppressed a smile.
"I didn't know you were coming too, Evangeline."
She poured two large glasses of wine and handed one to me with a "you're gonna need it" look on her face.
"Adam wanted to borrow my car, and when he told me what happened, I decided to tag along. I'm so sorry, Holly. About the hearing and, of course, about Harvey."
"Thanks."
"Where's Teddy?"
she asked before taking a sip of her wine.
"His room is right next door."
She set boots down. He landed with a hefty thump and then wove around her legs.
"I'm going to go say hello."
Evangeline swept from the room, leaving Adam and me alone with the palpable tension of his frustration. I sighed deeply when the door closed.
"I'm sorry about the password thing, Adam."
He stepped closer and pulled me into his arms.
"I only want to keep you safe. If someone targeted Harvey because he was helping you, that means you have some powerful enemies. We don't know that's what happened."
I relaxed against his chest and smiled slightly as the smell of pine and cedar swirled around me like a comforting blanket. Adam always smelled like the forest, like trees and fresh, clear river water, all bathed in sunshine. I couldn't fault him for being overprotective at times. It was quite literally in his nature. Not only was Adam a shifter, which on its own guaranteed a protective streak, but as a large, predatory animal, he was even more bent toward being territorial and fierce. For the most part, I didn't mind. Stars, sometimes I downright enjoyed it. I had a tendency to get myself in over my head and found it comforting to know Adam would always have my back. I'd learned to take the good with the occasional annoying. Adam dropped a quick kiss to my lips.
"You taste like wine," he said, his eyes gleaming.
I kissed him again, and then pulled out of reach before things got too heated. As appealing as the idea was, it didn't quite feel right given the events of the day.
"How are you doing?"
he asked.
"Shaken, I guess. I don't really know what to think. I want to get out there and do something, to help in some way."
Adam nodded.
"I know you do, but it's safer if we stay here until the morning. Then we'll head back to Beechwood Harbor."
"I shouldn't have even tried. The hearing was a complete waste of time. And now, this."
"You had to try, gorgeous." He cocked his head. "Wait until this is resolved, and then you and Teddy can talk about the next steps. There must be something he can do."
I shrugged.
"I don't know about that. You should have seen them, Adam. They were so smug and spiteful. None of them really seemed like they wanted to be there. And that one witch, whatever her name is, she acted like I'd personally offended her or something."
"And you're sure you've never met her before? You said she was younger than the rest of the council members. Is it possible you went to academy together? Or maybe rival academies?"
"Not that I can think of.
I've been racking my brain trying to figure it out. None of it makes any sense. The sham of a hearing, Harvey leaving before testifying, and now his death. I shook my head. Teddy says he was poisoned.
Really?
Hopefully they'll get a lock on the signature. Adam raised an eyebrow.
Signature?
Potions carry the signature of the maker. The magic that's used to create the potion leaves behind a trace. Every potion maker has their own unique identifier. Adam blinked, surprised by the kernel of information.
So this should be pretty open and shut then, right? I mean, if all they have to do is discern some markings.
Not necessarily, I countered, beginning to pace the room. First of all, unless the murderer is a potion maker, it's unlikely the signature will lead directly to them. Most likely they purchased the potion. Obviously, the kinds of potion that can kill aren't sold in the corner shops or from private potion masters. So either the potion was sold on the black magic market, or the killer has an innate knowledge of potion work and was able to blend two or more innocuous formulas together to create a deadly concoction.
What happens to the signatures then?
They become muddled, hard if not impossible to read. The other problem is that even if the potions are tracked back to the master who made them, it doesn't tell the SPA who mixed them and dosed Harvey. Regulated potion shops and masters have to keep detailed records of what's being sold. But those who sell on the black magic market aren't as stringent with their bookkeeping. A crooked grin tugged at the corners of Adam's mouth.
So, before Harvey shut you down, you were selling your potions on this black magic market?
Well, it was a little different. My cheeks warmed. I wasn't selling anything dangerous or forbidden. Adam tugged me back into his arms.
I always knew you were trouble, Holly Bolt.
Yeah. I rolled my eyes and pulled away, then waved a hand at the sleek cabinet Evangeline had already raided. If you're hungry, there are some snacks in the minibar.
How'd you know? He asked, grinning.
Well, besides the fact that your stomach is a black hole, you decided the safety password should be pistachios. I took an educated guess. Adam chuckled and went to rummage through the minibar. He carried the loot over to the couch and popped the top on a can of peanuts. He took a handful and started munching, even as his expression darkened.
Not to be insensitive, but without Harvey, what are the chances of a second hearing going through?
Not good.
I'm sorry, gorgeous.
I flopped onto the couch beside him and sighed. Me too.
I'm sure Cassie would jump at the chance to have you back at Siren Song full time.
It's not so much the money that's the problem, I replied softly. I've managed to save most of the reward money I earned with Nick after that fiasco with Georgia Banks.
Holly, you won't work at a coffee shop for the rest of your life. You'll figure something else out.
His words were meant to be comforting, but they only added to the twisting anxiety in my stomach. All my life, I'd stood out from other witches and wizards. I'd showed exceptional talent for potion work when I was very young, and my mother and then my Aunt Bethany had fostered it. I was the one the family put their faith in. They believed I was destined to go on and do amazing things, to rise up past the stigma of the Bolt family name and prove that Bolt witches were more than troublemakers and outcasts. So far, I'd managed to be arrested 3 times and trailed by the SPA for the majority of my adult life for a crime I didn't commit. Just when I was finally breaking free of all those obstacles, the hope of starting a new life was squashed right before my eyes. How was I supposed to bounce back from that kind of crushing blow? Adam's chocolate eyes stared down at me, etched with concern. He brushed a strand of my hair away from my face and tucked it gently behind my ear.
Gorgeous. I hate seeing you like this. What can I do to help?
Want me to go out and get you some lemon clouds? He asked with a smile.
No, thank you.
I laughed and burrowed into his side. I've already had way more than I'm willing to admit to over the last 24 hours. Adam chuckled.
Sounds serious if you're not even willing to tell me how many you've had. I'm not exactly the snack police. If anything, I've corrupted you. turned you full-blown grazer. Once we get back to Beechwood Harbor, we might need to check into some kind of 12-step program. We sat together in silence, wading through our own thoughts, until someone knocked softly on the door. Adam untangled his arm from around me and went to answer it. A smile pulled at my lips as he tried to open it, only to realize it was warded shut.
A little help here, gorgeous?
I waved my hand, and a pulse of magic zeroed in and released the ward. Adam stumbled back as the door flew open. Evangeline and Teddy came into the room, and my eyebrows hiked up as I noted their hands were clasped together. Evangeline was the one who'd introduced me to Teddy in the first place, and while I'd had my suspicions that they were more than just friends, I hadn't seen any concrete proof. Adam locked the door, but didn't ask me to reset the ward. He came back to join me on the couch. Teddy waved his hand and let Evangeline take the armchair. She sat, and he stood behind her, his hands planted on the back of the sleek chair.
"How are you feeling, Holly?" Evangeline asked.
"Honestly, I think I've gone numb." Teddy gave an understanding nod.
"I spoke with my friend from the Haven Herald. According to his source, the scene has been cleared, and they're officially calling it a murder. The other details will come in over the next few days, I'm sure. Knowing the SPA, they'll probably try to keep this out of the papers as long as possible. But I would expect it to be public knowledge within the next 24 hours. If you'd like, I can stay in Beechwood Harbor and take on the press on your behalf."
"The press?" My brows wrinkled. "Why would the press be interested in me?"
"The council records will go public. Those records will show that Harvey was at your hearing prior to his death. I'd be shocked if the media didn't come sniffing around for information."
I sighed. "Great.
The SPA also wants to speak with both of us. I've arranged the interviews for first thing in the morning. After that, we can all head back to Beechwood Harbor."
Evangeline moved to the edge of her seat and offered a kind smile.
"Teddy will handle everything, Holly. You don't have to worry."
I nodded, but her comforting words only went so far. Despite my track record, I actually preferred not to be the one in the center of these situations. Yet despite my best efforts, I continued to get tangled up in situations that quickly swallowed me up until I was in way over my head. Something told me things were going to get a lot worse before they got better. Chapter 7. Despite Teddy's assurances, a sharp knock on the door interrupted our room service dinner a few hours later. Adam answered it, and begrudgingly ushered two SPA agents into the room. According to their badges, both of the agents were shifters. The first was a tall, broad-shouldered woman named Aggie Bramble, an eagle shifter. Her face was all sharp angles, except for her nose, which looked as though it had been broken on more than one occasion and hadn't set properly, giving it a crooked appearance that threw off the straight lines of the rest of her features. Her partner, Vincent Mache, was a bear shifter, and looked the part. He towered a few inches above his statuesque partner and was twice as broad, with burly muscles that bulged under the skin-tight black t-shirt he wore. Teddy greeted the agents with a curt nod.
"I was told we would be interviewed in the morning."
Agent Mache crossed his arms.
"We don't have time to waste on a case like this, not when the victim is one of our own," he said, his gaze cold.
It was almost like he was waiting for Teddy to argue. What would he do then? Slam him against the wall? It looked as though he could level Teddy flat with a simple tap to the chest. "It's fine," I hurried to interject. I stood and brushed my fingers off on a napkin before extending a hand toward the female agent. "I'm Holly Bolt." Evangeline took my lead and jumped up as well. She busied herself at the mini-bar, preparing each of the agents a tall glass of spritzer water with lime and lemon wedges. At one point, her eagerness to please would have driven me batty, but I'd known her long enough to know it was just her nature. Ever the hostess.
"Thank you for agreeing to meet with us, Ms. Bolt,"
Agent Bramble began.
"I do apologize if there was a mix-up in the timing. But as my partner has already stated, this investigation is going to be running around the clock until we get some answers. Harvey would have demanded nothing less. I smiled down at my hands. That's probably true.
Harvey was a dear friend, she continued. He will be greatly missed, both inside the agency, as well as personally.
I gave a solemn nod, hit by an unexpected wave of emotion in light of the agent's words.
As far as we know, Ms. Bolt and Mr. Travail, you were two of the last people to have seen Harvey alive, so we'd like to ask a few questions. We're trying to establish a firm timeline of the day's events leading up to the attack,
Agent Mache explained.
Harvey's assistant, Harriet, told us he arrived at his office a little after 8 o'clock this morning. He checked in with his support staff, and then departed to meet you at Council Hall where he was to provide testimony.
That's correct, Teddy answered evenly.
What time did he arrive?
Promptly at 9 o'clock, Teddy said.
Agent Mache looked to me for confirmation, and I nodded.
All right, he continued. What time did the hearing conclude?
Mr. Culpepper didn't stay for the duration of the hearing, Teddy said.
I don't know exactly when he left, but it couldn't have been more than 10 minutes into the proceedings. I can furnish the detailed minutes of the hearing. They're brief, he added, his voice tinged with irritation.
Evangeline swept in and served the drinks, breaking the tension with a sweet smile. Each of the agents thanked her. She took a seat beside Teddy and rested her hand on his knee, the picture of elegance and composure. I nearly smiled despite the seriousness of the moment. She was truly a master. Agent Bramble picked up the questions as her partner paused to take a drink. His hand, nearly the size of a catcher's mitt, dwarfed the crystal glass.
So, she asked, when Harvey left the hearing, did he say anything?
I shook my head. 1 minute he was there, the next he was gone. Teddy cleared his throat, silently reminding me that he was the one answering the questions.
Mr. Culpepper was set to testify and vanished before he was able to. The council called for a break, and I attempted to call Mr. Culpepper several times, but was unable to reach him.
Agent Bramble frowned at Agent Mache, who didn't look her way.
How did he appear? At the hearing?
Agent Mache asked. He seemed normal to me. I shrugged one shoulder. I played the memory of the morning over and over again in my mind, but couldn't pick out anything specific that might be helpful. He mentioned being swamped, caught up with the Praxel case.
Who isn't?
Mache grumbled under his breath. Agent Bramble gave him an annoyed look before asking,
Miss Bolt, I hate to ask, but you've known Harvey for over half your life.
I didn't need to be reminded. Harvey had first entered my life following the murder of my parents. His role in my life was twofold, to protect me and to keep me from causing trouble. After everything with Gabriel and his ring of dark and dangerous friends, I was thrust under even closer examination and saw Harvey on a bi-monthly basis. The meetings mostly served as a reminder that the SPA was watching me closely. Agent Bramble continued.
Can you think of anyone who would want to harm him?
I shook my head. Harvey was... well, he was an acquired taste. I'd be lying if I said we'd always had a smooth relationship. He was about as straightforward as they come, and sure, sometimes that might have ruffled feathers. I cringed, wondering if the expression was offensive to an eagle shifter. Agent Bramble didn't appear to notice the questionable turn of phrase. If it were me, I'd start with his recent case files and see who might have been on his radar. She bristled, her thin lips twisting into a scowl.
Thank you, Ms. Bolt, she replied, her tone icy.
I'm sorry, I sighed. Obviously, that's what you intend to do. I wasn't thinking. Agent Mache frowned, then finished the rest of his drink. I dropped my eyes to the coffee table between us.
Do you have any questions for us?
Agent Mache asked me. I glanced up. Will I be assigned a new agent? The hulking bear shifter turned to his partner and offered a wry expression.
Agent Bramble will be filling in as your liaison to the SBA until a proper caseworker can be established.
I met the sharp eyes of Agent Bramble, and my stomach flip-flopped. Wonderful.
The following morning, we all piled into Evangeline's tiny sports car and set off back to Beechwood Harbor. The trip normally took a little over 3 hours, but Evangeline had relinquished the keys to Adam, and he was driving the car like he'd stolen it, completely ignoring the daggers Teddy was throwing from his place in the cramped back seat. I caught him glaring at the back of Adam's head in the rearview mirror and had to suppress a laugh. The two of them were polar opposites in every regard. Adam was the poster child for rebellion, leather jackets, rakish smile, and devil-may-care attitude. Teddy likely slept in a three-piece suit, and probably didn't have so much as a speeding ticket on his record.
"You do realize this is a 45 zone?" Teddy finally chimed in.
Adam laughed, but he took his foot off the gas and let the car coast for a few minutes as we wrapped around the curving roads that led away from the city and back to the Washington coast. We weren't close enough that I could smell the sea in the air, but the lush trees that lined both sides of the two-lane highway started to soothe my nerves. I was on my way home. Every mile that flew by was one more between me and the mess back inside the Haven. Beyond that, I simply missed my routine. Shopping at Thistle, the small natural food market, and seeing familiar faces each morning at the coffee shop. I loved being able to identify every face walking the downtown streets after dinner. There was something reassuring about living in a close-knit community, an unexpected freedom found in the sense of familiarity. Boots sat on my lap, calmly watching the scenery whiz by as we turned onto another curvy road. I smiled down at him as my fingers worked through his thick, tawny fur. "You don't mind the speed, do you, Bootsy?" Teddy muttered something behind me, and I had no doubt his scowl had shifted from the back of Adam's head to my own.
"It'll be fine, Teddy," Evangeline said soothingly. "This car has so many safety charms that it would quite literally take a meteor shower to do any damage."
"Really?" I asked, twisting around to look at her. She nodded.
"Originally it was charmed by my security team when I was working on the Wednesday Witch. If you think human paparazzi are terrible, you can only imagine how awful they can be when they're bestowed with magic." She grimaced. "I hired a security team to follow me around at all times to make sure I was safe. They called themselves the King's Guard. Although as far as I know, they never actually guarded royalty. Seems like I found that out after I signed the contracts. In any case, they proved to be quite good at their jobs, so I forgave them the slightly dubious branding."
"Impressive," Adam said. "I've heard about them before. They're kind of legends."
Evangeline nodded.
"Quentin, he's a wizard, though some say he leans more into sorcery. I didn't really care as long as he could provide the charms I needed. Anyway, he's the one who charmed this car to be pretty much close to indestructible."
"Still," Teddy interjected, "I'd rather not put it to the test."
Adam gave a disappointed frown. The rest of the trip was mostly spent talking about trivial things. It was obvious we were all attempting to tiptoe around the murder or anything related to my failed counsel hearing. In the end, Adam flipped on the radio, and we all fell into a comfortable silence. We pulled off in front of Beechwood Manor a little after noon. Boots jumped out the open window as soon as the car came to a stop and made a beeline around the house, his bottle-brush tail straight as an arrow, likely headed for the back door, which was equipped with a doggy door, straight into the kitchen.
"Apparently someone missed home," Adam said, watching from the driver's seat. "More like he wonders if he missed out on something in his food bowl."
Adam scoffed.
"Well, if the undead princess is even awake, I doubt she's going to show him much compassion."
I didn't argue. Lacey and Boots weren't exactly BFFs. We all laughed, and then got out of the car and gathered the bags from the trunk. Posey was waiting in the entryway to greet us. Her silver-purple silhouette shimmered with excitement as I followed Adam inside.
"Holly, dear, how did your hearing go?"
Apparently no one had told her what happened. Evangeline cringed as she joined me.
"I'm sorry, Posey. Adam and I tried to find you last night before we left."
Posey's smile fell away.
"I was with Gwen. She dragged me to a ghost support group."
We all stared, dumbfounded by the revelation. Half a dozen follow-up questions popped into my mind.
Did you say you were at a ghost support group? Adam ventured.
Posey scoffed and flapped a translucent hand through the air.
She's been on me for months, ever since Katerina was here. I mostly went along to get her off my back.
I shoved aside my questions and filed them away under the mental label of entertaining conversations for another time. Well, to be honest, Posey, the hearing didn't go so well.
Oh, no. I'm so sorry, dear. I hoped having Mr. Culpepper's testimony would make it a sure thing.
All of us glanced around the room, choosing different focal points.
What?
Posey asked. Harvey was called away before he could testify to anything. I drew in a deep breath. And then, well, he was found murdered last night. Posey's bespectacled eyes went wide. Her mouth worked as she struggled to find the right words and eventually sputtered,
"Murdered? Holly, I'm so... That's simply... How horrifying! Do they know what happened?"
I shook my head. "It's still under investigation. We met with the SBA agents in charge of the case last night at the hotel."
"Well, I'm very sorry to hear that, dear. He was a lovely man. Troll. Creature."
A pounding sounded from down the hall, off to the right of the grand staircase. What was that? I asked Posey.
That's not...
Evangeline started, shifting a cautious eye to Adam. Adam shut the front door.
I knew we were forgetting something.
Chapter 8. Should I even ask? I said, with my eyes squeezed closed. I had a feeling I knew who was doing the pounding, but was silently praying I was wrong. I peeled one eye open and swiveled it in Adam's direction. He gave Evangeline a sheepish glance. I opened both eyes and stared at Evangeline. She shifted her weight from one leg to the other and refused to look at me.
"That's Nick,"
Adam finally admitted. I cringed. "You left Nick alone in the manor all night? With Lacey?"
"We got your call and just kind of left,"
Adam explained.
"He was still sleeping off the massive dose of sleeping potion Evie fed him."
I waved my hand toward the frantic pounding sound. "Well, clearly that's no longer the case. I sealed the door from the outside," Evangeline chimed in. "He can't get out and Lacey can't get in." I threw my hands up in the air. How am I supposed to explain that to him? "Oops, sorry, Nick. I didn't realize my roomies would drug you and then barricade you in a dark room for 24 hours. Please don't be mad."
"That's not helping, Holly."
Adam ground his teeth together.
"What are we going to do? Are you sure you can't wipe his memory?"
"For the millionth time, no." I rubbed my temples. "I don't do mind magic. It's too risky, especially when he's already been treated. I meant to ask, well, I was planning to ask Harvey about the options. He's the only one I trust." I raked my fingers through my hair. "Think, think, think." "I could give him more tea," Evangeline offered quietly. "Buy us some more time." "No!" I boomed, my voice much louder than I'd intended. The four faces staring at me all flinched at once. Evangeline's face crumpled, and Teddy wrapped an arm around her shoulders and led her off toward the kitchen. Guilt slid down deep into my gut. I'd have to mend those fences later.
"Hello? Can anyone hear me? Help!"
Nick's frantic cries came down the hall. "Ugh, this is ridiculous." I stormed down the hallway, scraping my mind for what kind of tale I could spin to make the circumstances any less bizarre. I came up empty. With a flick of my hand, I released the lock Evangeline had set and pulled the door open. Nick, his dark hair sticking out in every possible direction, blinked a few times.
"Holly?"
I drew in a quick breath and slapped a smile on my face. "Hello, Nick." Nick squinted at me.
"What are you... What's going on? What time... What day is it?"
"It's Tuesday, a little after noon, I think. Are you feeling better? Adam and Evangeline told me you stopped by late last night and fell asleep on the couch.
Let me guess, they made you watch that movie with the talking dog? I know, it's the worst. I fall asleep every time, too. Adam stood at my side.
Sorry, man, I thought you'd dig it.
It was the most absurd lie, but I had no idea what else to say. I needed some kind of plausible, if not logical, reason for his overnight stay in the manor's formal study.
He exhaled. I guess so. Is there even a TV in here?
He asked, craning back to look inside the study. Come on, I said, gesturing for him to follow me. Let's get you some lunch. He stayed rooted in place.
Why was the door locked?
Oh, that. I flapped a hand and smiled. Boots recently figured out how to open doorknobs. He's so tall, he gets up there and works his little paws. I mimed a strange series of gestures. Adam snorted. I shot him a glare. Not helping. When I looked back at Nick, he was frowning.
The cat opens doors?
Uh-huh. I rocked back on my heels. How do you feel about nachos for lunch? I know I sure could go for some right now. Nick stared at Adam and me for another long moment, but finally gave a tentative nod.
Yeah, okay.
Adam led the way back down the hall, past the stairs, and into the kitchen. I breathed a sigh of relief when I saw that Evangeline and Teddy were already at work making some coffee. Look who's up, I told them, my voice artificially bright and sunny. Evangeline's eyes went wide with recognition.
Oh, good.
I told you guys not to make people watch that terrible movie, I prompted to Evangeline. Put poor Nick right to sleep. Her eyebrows lifted and I cringed, mouthing, I know. I mimed smacking myself on the forehead while Nick's back was turned.
That's all right, Nick finally said. I've had a cold the last few days and I think it's making my head fuzzy. It probably took too much nighttime syrup. Thanks for letting me sleep it off here.
Not a problem.
Evangeline said. Obviously relieved, he'd swallowed the painfully thin cover story.
Adam and Evangeline told me you were out of town, Nick said, turning back to me.
I just got home. The trip was shorter than expected. Adam went to work pulling out the ingredients for his massive 6-layer nacho platter, one of his custom creations, and I brought over sugar and cream for the coffee. Evangeline and Nick sat down at the table after we assured them there was nothing they could do to help. The manor kitchen was large, but not quite big enough for 5 adults and 1 begging tabby cat to work comfortably side by side. I dropped the sugar and cream off at the table and then hauled Boots into my arms and deposited him on his cat bed. Stay there and I'll give you a treat, I told him with a waggle of my finger. We don't need you tripping someone. He frowned up at me, but then remembered the promise of the treat and sat down, his haunches sticking out from his rotund backside. Good boy. I took a seat at the table on the other side of Nick. Teddy brought over the coffee and then went back to grab some mugs. Within a few minutes, everyone, except Adam, had a cup of hot coffee and was seated at the table.
You sure you don't need any help?
Evangeline asked Adam. He craned his head around with a grin.
Let the master work.
I rolled my eyes. Trust me, Evangeline, it's better if you don't know the secret to his nachos. They're delicious, but there are probably some questionable ingredients.
Hey,
Adam said, shooting me a playful scowl. I held up my hands. I'm just saying, you're a snack food genius, but you also call marshmallow fluff food.
Well, rest assured, there isn't a speck of fluff on these bad boys.
I'd hope not, Teddy said indignantly. He turned in his seat and eyed the stack of takeout menus piled on one end of the counter. He was clearly making backup lunch plans.
This is nice,
Posey said, floating through the closed kitchen door.
I do love having a full house for a meal. It reminds me of when Earl and I used to host out-of-town family and friends for the holidays.
I looked over my shoulder at Posey. That's sweet.
Who are you talking to?
Nick asked. Bat wings. I whipped around and plastered on a faux smile. Boots. Never mind that he was in the opposite corner of the kitchen.
Oh, dear,
Posey said, suddenly at my side. I forced myself not to watch her as she considered Nick.
I forgot he was still here. I think he saw me last night out in the garden.
Teddy, Evangeline, and I all shifted our eyes toward her. He'd seen Posey? How was that even possible? And if so, why couldn't he see her now? Was there some kind of rule that ghosts could only be seen at night? My heart pounded harder. Nick glanced up and frowned at the strained expressions on our faces.
You guys okay?
Adam swooped in with a cookie sheet of nachos.
Voila! That was fast,
Teddy said, his skepticism ratcheting up another notch. Adam grinned.
The magic of a microwave,
Posey scoffed.
That beastly thing.
I think they look great, I chimed in, reaching for a chip. Everyone followed my lead and dug in with extra exuberance, even Teddy, and shifted the conversation to something completely benign. Sports. Adam, Teddy, and Nick launched into an intense debate about the upcoming March Madness, whatever that was. Evangeline and I rolled our eyes at each other, and Posey floated off through the ceiling. I made a mental note to track her down after Nick left to ask exactly what had prompted her to think he'd seen her the night before. After the last chip had been devoured, Nick announced he needed to get home and shower and try to put in a few hours at the office. He'd been behind schedule thanks to the cold, and I imagined more than a few sleepless nights, and needed to try to get something productive done for the day. I walked him to the door and said goodbye, then watched him until he was nearly out of sight before closing the door. I sagged against it and exhaled a deep breath. Was my life ever going to go back to being blissfully boring? Later that afternoon, after a much-needed nap, I left the manor. I didn't have a solid plan in place, so I decided to go for a walk to clear my mind. I circled my way around town, wandering through the quiet residential pockets before going downtown. As I walked, the tangled ball of thoughts inside my mind started to unwind a bit. After lunch, Teddy had gone to the study to make some phone calls and try to figure out a plan for my next move. I'd get a full report when I got back to the manor. But for the moment, all I had to go by were the events that had transpired over the last 48 hours. It was hard to imagine a scenario where a second council hearing would go any differently. Teddy assured me there was a chance, but that was in his nature as a superstar lawyer. Part of me wondered if I shouldn't call the whole thing off and avoid another humiliating, not to mention pointless, council hearing. I wasn't sure I'd be able to rein in my anger if the second hearing had the same result as the first. As it was, I barely avoided landing back in a jail cell. What would my future look like without potion making? I could still tend to my garden beds and the myriad of plants in my greenhouse. Assuming the banishment wasn't made permanent, I could travel to and from the Haven, so I could no doubt make quite a nice income selling top-quality plant material and potion ingredients to the shops. I could become a top supplier and become renowned for having prize-winning plants. Would that be enough? I loved the time spent in my garden, but had always considered it a necessary part of being a potions witch living outside the Haven. It wasn't something I'd set out to do commercially. Not to mention the manor's backyard wasn't equipped to handle the scope of gardening I'd need to do in order to keep up with demand if I were to attempt it full-time. In addition, I'd have to buy a car or truck to cart the supplies to and from the Haven. Then there was Adam. He'd made it clear he had no intention of ever living in the Haven system again. While I was currently disenchanted enough to agree with him, I wasn't sure it was a lifelong commitment. Being 3 hours away wasn't so bad, and I had missed Beechwood Harbor during my time in the city. But if I wanted a future outside of potion making, I'd have far better opportunities inside the Haven. Wouldn't I? Or would it be like before, taking menial jobs there because people were leery of my reputation? If I stayed in Beechwood Harbor, I would be fine. Everyone liked me well enough, and I had a job, friends, and a makeshift family. The type of support system that ensured I wouldn't spend birthdays or the holidays alone. I was happy, wasn't I? It all circled back to one thing. Potions. It was the missing piece, and I couldn't seem to find a way to rearrange the other pieces of my life to make up for that void. With that miserably drawn conclusion, I trudged back to the manor. On the way, I passed Evangeline as she wandered down the opposite side of the